Hello everyone, welcome to LTV Talks. Today we have Nikita with us. Nikita is the founder at paywall.tips, where he's helping with product management services for mobile apps with subscriptions. He heavily focuses on onboarding and paywalls and is usually commenting on different paywall tips and optimization tactics that brands can leverage for optimizing their subscription funnels. Previously, he has been looking at a product for Adapti, which is a B2B SaaS solution for mobile subscriptions. And he has also been the chief product officer at Velbs, where he assembled a team of professionals and built a mobile product from scratch. Today, we have him on the show to maybe get us an insight on how he thinks about paywalls and onboarding, and to maybe get a sense of what you could do for your subscription apps. And with that, welcome Nikita, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me to this podcast. Yeah, I'm kind of specialized on the paywalls and onboardings lately. I was doing product work on mobile apps for the last 5 years as a chief product officer on a health and fitness app. And also I was working in Adapti. It's an SDK for subscriptions for mobile apps, where I was working on the product and working with other developers. And well, I consider myself quite experienced in this area. So, well, now I'm into this first time user experience in the app. So I'm trying to improve it in other people's apps and also talk about it on my LinkedIn profile and share my experience as well. But it was not always this way. I was not born an expert in paywalls. Kind of specialized in it during the last 5 years, working on the mobile product itself. And yeah, I can share how I got here, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, like, you know, just in terms of why it's so interesting to have you here is because you have such a wide range of experiences, right? Like, also on the app side, but also with your hackathons that I'm sure we'll speak about a little bit. And also in terms of, you know, like, yeah, your work history. So would love for you to expand on that, right? Like, how did you come to become an expert?
Yeah, surprisingly, not a lot of people ask me about hackathons and stuff. So yeah, it's good research. So I was always about mobile apps. And first I started as an iOS developer. I was working in different companies, and I was working on mobile apps itself, coding on Objective-C, then on Swift. I was here when the Swift was introduced. I migrated a lot of apps to Swift, and so first, and like the biggest part of my identity, I think, was that I am an iOS developer and I work on mobile apps and trying to make it better, not only from the code side but also from the user experience side as well. And I changed a lot of places. I won't dive deep into any of them, but in the end, around in 2018, I think I end up in Willy. It's an international ride-hailing service with personal drivers, like Mercedes. It's working in different cities around the world where people are willing to order Mercedes for a lot of money. And I helped this. I started as a developer, but also advanced to being a head of mobile here. So I managed a team of 8 mobile developers, iOS and Android, for developing 4 apps. So iOS and Android, drivers, and passengers apps. And it was really interesting experience because it was my first proper management experience, but also it was really interesting because of the challenges that I was facing, and working on the app that is working in real time with GPS data, with driver's data, and across the world with thousands and thousands of drivers and millions of rides around the world, around the globe. It was really, really challenging and interesting. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about the development process as well, because it was a pretty big team. Well, when I started, it was maybe around 30 people, but when I left, there were more than 100 people. So I was here when the growth happened. So,
by the way, funny anecdote, right? On that is that we both worked for Wheelie. I mean, I was an external consultant, but I also worked for Wheelie, and then our paths crossed because as I remember the app being there, you know, app developers being a very big part of, or the software developers being a very big part of the work project that we had. But we never encountered each other. I think we just crossed paths.
Yeah, that's funny. And Wheelie was definitely a very interesting experience and a very important one. And well, I worked a lot with the product team. It was actually the first workplace where I started working directly with the product managers and CPO. And I didn't really knew at the time what product managers does and like what the work consists of. And when I started working on them, I saw how they introduce tasks for us, how they explain what we need to develop and why, how they work with metrics and analytics. I dive deeper into analytics. I worked a lot with Amplitude, Mixpanel, and other analytic tools, and I really liked it. And I thought for myself, maybe the next my next job will be as a product manager. And actually, that's what happens because I joined Welps as a like founding engineer, you can say, like the first employee, and I'm still responsible for the whole product and the team and technical implementation. So for metrics, for revenue, for basically for everything, and I'm working as a CPO for the last 5 years, and it's I think really important because I saw the outcome of my actions and my decisions about the product itself. I saw how they end up for users, how they end up affecting metrics. And also, I think it's really important for product managers to be responsible for the money, for the revenue, for growth metrics. And while being responsible for unit economy as well, I was trying to make LTV bigger than acquisition costs. While doing that, I quickly discovered that improving paywall and onboarding in the app is a way to go because some even small change here could affect metrics and conversion rates, and in the end, the revenue metrics really like in a big way. No other feature in the app could even come close to that. And of course, I didn't drop working on the product itself, but I quickly discovered that I need to invest more time and development time as well into working on our paywall and onboarding. And we also developed A/B testing system, our own, and for the paywalls and onboardings. And it helped me a lot to understand what challenges does developers face developing these systems and how to make it, usable and what it needs to be, like what the features there should be.
One very quick question and a bit of a detour. In terms of when you said you found out that it was actually one of the most important parts of optimizing your revenue or your LTV, how did you come to that conclusion? Like, were you very actively testing paywalls and you saw that, for example, many things were resulting in a higher revenue? And the reason I ask is because I work with a lot of app developers who actually don't have that realization even now. So how did you come to have that testing phase and learning about it as well?
I see that a lot, even in Adaptive, when I was talking to other app developers, I noticed that there's a lot of education that needs to be done in our market. And I think a lot of app developers, being developers, thinking like developers, maybe not quite understand like how crucial to have a perfect first time experience in their app. And how did I come to this? Well, I think there was some kind of onboarding and paywall, of course, at the beginning that we started with, that was like from the top of my head, and the pricing itself was also from the top of my head, so nothing fancy here, and there was no tests at the beginning. But then, I thought to myself, like, what I can do to improve our metrics. I saw that they are terrible. I didn't know any benchmarks at the time, of course. But I still saw that like one digit conversion rates, like say 2-3% conversion rate is really, really bad. And I noticed that there was some steps in the onboarding process where users churn, and I thought that I can fix that. So for me, it was almost like a debug process, but for the first time user experience in the app. So I was thinking like a developer, like why they fail going through this process and how can I improve it? And then, well, I think over time I started thinking more like a customer, started thinking more like a user in terms of the easiness and like how clear and easy to understand this first time experience in the app, and is it working for me or not? So I was thinking in these terms and it worked, I guess. I improved the conversion rates like eightfold during the time. And also, well, we have really great metrics in terms of the conversion rates and also the retention rate itself. So the product itself is really good as well. In the users, we have a lot of users who are using us for like 3 or 4 years and still continue paying the subscription and using our app and losing weight and being better in their life. So I'm really happy about
that. Absolutely. I had, you know, even what you mentioned, right? Like, I think that's usually the route as well for many people, right? Like when I think the first level is when you don't even know that how big a lever this is, and then you get to know that it's going to be like a big lever for your LTV and for your business in general, and then you start noticing it. And then I also find like the second level of barrier for app developers, where they know that they have identified that this is a key area for them, but it's difficult for them to move this metric, right? So the question is for you, maybe like when you had this journey of moving that metric very significantly for the app, what kind of things were you playing around with? Like, did you have enough experimentation with pricing? Was that one of your biggest levers, or how do you categorize the kind of steps you took to get to that 8x conversion, let's say, over a period of time, of course?
Yeah, I think the biggest changes were like the more ambitious one. Like I thought for myself, do we really need a blocking login and registration here? Maybe we can ditch it altogether and let users create guest accounts first and then move this registration somewhere in profile and hide it from user. This alone gives us like 50% boost in conversion rate. And other changes like pricing and different intro offers, different like promo offers, and the mostly changes around pricing and paywall itself, they give a lot of boost in terms of conversion rate. And I noticed that in different countries and different regions, there are different things that works and different pricing strategies, of course, but I think that's I think a lot of people now understand that with the regional pricing, and that people are not the same around the world, and they think in different terms and about their money and about the subscriptions as well. And onboarding itself is really important. I think for a lot of app developers, it's a really low hanging fruit in terms of the improvement of conversion rate. And here I only, my thinking process was like how to make it clearer for user, like to easier to understand, and at the same time answering their all questions and thoughts they have in this process, and ask them about a lot of stuff and using this information for actually doing something good for them. So preparing like a really personalized training and diet plan, for example. But I think you just need to have enough courage and I think understanding, like to make big changes to this experience and big changes in pricing strategy and big changes in onboarding and paywall itself. And I think not a lot of developers like doing that actively. And I'm now trying to help them achieve that. And at the end, my end goal will be to let product managers and app developers work on the product itself. Let me work on optimizing the conversion rates and optimizing the funnel, because there are people who don't think about it at all and improving the product itself, and they have terrible conversion rates, for example. And there are people who spend a lot of time optimizing the funnel, optimizing onboarding and paywall, but then the product sucks and the user churn after activating trial, so they never convert from trial to paid. And let product managers work on the product, let me work on the optimizing funnel.
Yeah, and especially now, right? Like, I think with we had this interview with Maya from Adapti actually a few weeks ago, and she was talking about how, you know, there's almost like these all new set of app developers that have come into the market. So there are way more subscription apps than, let's say, 3 years ago. There's a huge stream of that happening. But also on the consumer end, right? Like, you have a lot of folks who are now very comfortable with subscription apps, and it's almost like you wouldn't think twice about why an app is asking you to subscribe, whereas maybe a few years ago that was very still evolving phase. And in this atmosphere now, I think it has become even more important for folks like you and for experts in this specific niche, because product managers have a lot more on their table now just to keep their app competitive in this space, right? So I think that also becomes a very key need for a PM team, let's say.
Yeah, for sure. And you're right that the market changes, and the subscription apps are definitely the normal, they're like default monetization now. And I think that's for good for both developers, of course, and the customers, actually, because, well, you can always cancel your subscription, you can even refund your money back, but when you pay in subscription type of monetization, you know that this app won't be abandoned, you know that this app will continue receiving updates, and if not, you can always cancel and refund. So I really like this monetization, even as a consumer, because paying for the apps, it's now almost like paying for services, lifetime services, and I know that it won't be abandoned somewhere in the future. Like, if you remember the early ages of App Store, you could buy some app and find out that it's not working on the latest iPhone because the developer never come to even rebuild the app for the new aspect ratio of the screen or something. And now I think it's almost impossible. If you have a subscribers, you kind of feel that you have to provide some value, you have to improve the product, you have to make some new features. I think it's pretty fair monetization strategy, both for consumer and the developer. So I'm all for it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I completely agree. And there's a lot of moving parts as well, right? Like, with that challenge of ever increasing needs on, let's say, the consumers start sort of expecting more from your app, usual app developer, not just like in terms of revisions or making sure that your product is up to date, but also I feel it's more becoming a connection where if you are paying for a service, for example, if I pay for certain subscriptions, I want them to make to be my trusted advisor in that sense, where in that field, they give me all the relevant information that I need from them. So if it's a meditation app, I don't expect that to be, I kind of expect it to feed me information along that journey and also know me well, right? Which is a huge ask. But it's required now, and it's a big part of your subscription offering.
Yeah, definitely. And onboardings now almost all the time is about personalization and making the feel that the app is personalized. Maybe the feel, maybe it's actually being personalized. I always try to convince developers to make some changes, let them understand that if you answer to the user's need that they have during onboarding, and you specialize your paywall and even maybe pricing for this need that they have, you will see better results. That's actually stuff that I usually recommend, and also the stuff that I usually write in my paywall reviews that I have on my LinkedIn. And a lot of developers just placing some generic paywall, not like thinking about what I actually answered during the onboarding process.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially these fitness apps, right? Like, there are a lot of apps that I've tried who ask you for these super long onboarding flows. And then after, in the first week, I see that they are not even using my some of the basic information that I've given to them. And it's very annoying, because I think on the user front, people are getting more and more, let's say, comfortable giving you information about these kind of things, which is going to help you personalize the app. But if you don't, then it's even more frustrating, because you're collecting all this information about me and then you're doing nothing about it. So I think that's it. There's a huge pressure there, right? And maybe it'll be cool for me to, for anyone listening, to know, how do you work with onboarding? Let's say if you look at an app, or if you are working with an app, how do you start breaking down their onboarding process, and how do you sort of go about optimizing it? Like, are you looking for qualitative, quantitative review, or where do you typically start?
Well, I usually start at just completing this onboarding myself and see the usual suspects, like blocking registration and stuff like this. And well, I have like already trained eye on this stuff, and I usually can kind of predict the conversion rates at each stage, but it's like a common like product sense that I developed over time. But of course, it's not a replacement for actually going and looking into the analytics. So my next step is to check the funnel, being it an amplitude or mixed panel or whatever. So try to find out the steps where users fail for some reason. And yeah, that's just to start with. And then I come up with this better onboarding, and we either test it or just release it and see how it improves the conversion rate or not, but usually improves. And yeah, I think about improving the onboarding itself, I would rather just make it better in any way possible. I think there are pretty objective metrics here about onboarding being better. I think understand which onboarding is good, which is not the case usually about the paywall, because it's like a creative, you know, you never know which one works better, which one converts customers. It's always trial and error, and I think the paywall is more like a better place to run A/B tests and try different ideas.
Especially what do you say kind of makes sense, right? Like, so you're saying, like, if you have an onboarding optimization project, then typically having that product sense that you have. And also, I think you have a very nice background, because you also not only have this product background, but you kind of, because of your developer background, you, and very extensive one, you can very quickly estimate how this would work technically and how to implement this.
Yeah, well, being a technical person actually really helps. It was helping me when I was product manager. It's helping me now when I'm doing consulting, because I work closely with the development team and the product team, and for my clients, I mean, and they usually have a lot of questions like, okay, you suggest us to remove the registration page, then how do we authorize users? And then I present them solutions, technical solutions that I know that works. I give them better understanding, like how to code it, like how to check it, what kind of process there should be, like what kind of architecture there should be for this kind of stuff. And yeah, it definitely helps me in helping my clients as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I can totally imagine. And having that sparring partner or an external sparring partner who don't only really know how to get these things done, but also has like an industry view is definitely helpful, right? Because if you work with multiple clients, then at some point you're very up to date with what's happening in the industry, and I think that makes a very unique combination that you have. So super insightful in that sense. But also within onboarding, you mentioned like, so, you know, with paywall, of course, there's a lot of testing involved. And I completely agree with like what I have seen so far in my clients, at least, that you have, as soon as you're talking about paywalls, you can't expect what you see. Sometimes you just see some crazy behavior in terms of, I know there are some best practices out there, but I think it's always best to not orient yourself towards those, but rather than go very blank canvas in your paywall. In onboarding, would you say that it's more easier to make sure that, okay, you know, if you know what the best practices are and like what kind of user behavior we are seeing, is it a bit easier that you wouldn't test maybe in that high frequency, but you would maybe take a very user-centric perspective and say, okay, maybe like having more login methods, having a Google sign in definitely works better, right? Like it's a no-brainer. So how do you go about seeing that testing process?
Well, actually, I'm trying to improve conversion rates and improving the metrics. And usually the questions like what kind of sign-in methods we need are not really the ones that being on a like discussed. Usually we go about having the same login methods that the Apples already have, or it doesn't really matter that much in terms of the conversion rate. The fact of registration itself is usually problematic for users. And in terms of the how go about the improvement of onboarding itself, as I said, I'm looking at analytics. I'm trying to understand the pain points, and then we just implement onboarding that is just better. And for some, if it's not better for some reason, we can always roll back. But usually I don't really test that much the onboarding process. Only some, maybe some features during onboarding itself, and not the whole process. I think the much better investment of time will be to implement more questions, more like branching path and more personalization during onboarding itself, and that will show the results that we want.
Definitely, and I come back. So, you know, you were talking about onboarding and how it can be improved. And, you know, sometimes you mentioned your process about how to go about doing or improving your onboarding in general. Would you want to move to pricing and paywall optimization? Like, describe how do you typically look at those aspects of conversions and how do you look at them from an LTV perspective? Because you mentioned that it's quite a big part of converting it, you know, or increasing your LTV.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the paywall is, you know, the hard part, and you have to think about the pricing, the products itself that you show to the user, like what are they, how many of these products you show, what periods, what prices. You have to have a basic understanding of the pricing on the market, like what usually other competitor apps is priced and how they priced and why. So it's definitely a big difference here between the apps and different categories. So there are some categories where apps can be really expensive, some categories where apps are really, really cheap, and you can't really change it too much, but you can always increase prices, but not by a lot margin, not by a big margin, but still. And I see this trend lately that a lot of app developers trying to make prices bigger by introducing yearly subscription and also introducing more features like AI features, like Duolingo did with the Duolingo Max subscription, and introducing family plans. So I think the trend here is that more app developers will try to sell more expensive subscriptions for users. So
I was curious, right? Like pricing is such a big aspect of paywall optimization. And if you think about it, it's also very difficult for apps who are established, right? Like that's always my feeling that if you are a Duolingo, it's very hard for you to optimize pricing by testing, let's say, your yearly subscription price. You can do it very carefully and you can still do it, but not maybe that frequently because you are, you know, you have the size to go with it. Or would you agree to that? Or do you think it's still up to be discussed?
I think not necessarily. I think, of course, some apps that are a way to access the content and service, for example, Netflix or Spotify, the users are pretty sensitive to the change in pricing and they are noticing it, and some media outlets writing about it, and it's all making it harder and harder to test it. But for apps, even for apps like Duolingo, I think they can make some dramatic changes to pricing and not a lot of people will notice. And even if they are, then there is always a way to choose any price you want in App Store that the developer is selling in, well, doing the tests. So that's a life hack for you, how to pay less for apps. Sorry about, sorry other app developers. So I think they definitely can run these tests, and I just see like in the last year how dramatically the pricing has changed, and a lot of app developers are doing that, and I think that's like a big trend that prices are increasing. But prices are increasing everywhere, not only the subscription apps. So I think that's pretty, it shouldn't surprise
anyone. One follow-up question there is, when you change this pricing, right, like how do you, as an app developer or as someone who can optimize pricing, what kind of indicators are you looking for when you decide to make that switch, right? Because I imagine, for example, as you said, right, environment plays quite a big role here, where if things are getting expensive and if I know inflation is at all time high, then maybe as a user, I'm more understanding of the fact that my subscription prices increase as well. So there's environmental role in that, but maybe there's also product roles, right? Like, for example, when Duolingo introduces AI and because AI is such, you know, is right now the buzz that's going around, maybe it can use extra pricing efforts to make sure that it's more attractive in this circumstance. So what are some of the indicators that you would be looking at to, you know, to suggest, let's say, a pricing change or a big one, a big change?
Well, I'll try to look at competitors. I'll try to understand is the app is underpriced or overpriced in comparison to the similar apps. And a lot of app developers tend to price their app a bit lower. So it's safe to say that like 20% increase in price is usually wouldn't hurt anyone. But I'm just trying to calculate LTV and see like what price should we have and with which conversion metrics should we have so that our unit economy will work, that we'll have a good return on ad spend, and we'll see a working economy of the app. And I'm thinking in these terms, like what price should we have that it will make sense in terms of the business. And then go about that, and I'll try to test different periods and prices and see how it goes. And for competitors and basic unit economy of the app, I think the first things.
Absolutely. And I also like to do one more exercise here, or two more exercises actually. One is, I always try to look at alternative costs. So sometimes your app is solving a problem that is so big
that you can actually go very aggressive with pricing, you know, because it's a very niche use case that sometimes these apps are solving. And willing folks, for example, if you're working on a weight loss app, right, like depending on what you're serving, I think weight loss apps have the highest range of subscription prices. If you look at it, you have apps which are priced super low to apps which are priced quite high in terms of what they're offering. And I always feel that it's because of the alternatives that they're competing against, because one app is trying to position themselves as the, you know, as an alternative to having a personal trainer, whereas some apps are just looking at being a supplement of your weight loss journey, and they're not trying to replace your personal trainer, but just sort of maybe, you know, helping you to journalize or to make journals and make sure that you're recording everything. So looking at alternative. And do you also, in terms of planning, in terms of plan lens and trial lens, are you also trying to orient yourself according to like industry, or do you advise more for folks to go, you know, to go broad with the testing? Because it's a very open wide field, right? Like I've seen apps which are trying to have free trials without your credit card information, and then they ask you at the end of it. You have models where they're asking beforehand. So how do you look at that aspect of optimization?
That's an interesting question. And when I was working on the state of the app report in Adaptia, I was calculating analytics for thousands of apps. And I saw that the majority of the trials are 3 or 7 days, and others are like non-existent in terms of the market share. And but you can always try different inter periods, not only trials. You can try pay upfront, pay as you go. You can try a subscription without trial. You can try show the trial, and then if user cancels or close the paywall, then you can offer a subscription without trial, but cheaper. There are a lot of options here, and you just have to test and see what works. And as I mentioned, it can even be different in different regions for the same app. So it's all really just a matter of optimization and like finding out the perfect solution that works for your app and your customers, which is more important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's also this whole element, right, around when you're working with these sort of lens and periods and trial, you can almost go into this rabbit hole of optimizing and trying to find the right combination. And sometimes I think you know, for one of the apps that we worked with, we were trying to have this, again, bringing in the user psychology bit, right? The idea was that we are going to limit the choices that users have, so that they just have one decision to make. And how we based that value was basically that we saw that all these lifetime purchases were very famous with the user base. And so we had reason to believe that they were just like sort of, you know, looking for a higher period or higher length subscriptions. And as soon as, instead of having those three options, like 1 month, 3 month, 1 year, etc., as soon as we just started saying 1 year subscription, this is the price, this is the period trial length you get, I think we increased trial conversions around 28% and subscription conversions by, I think, 65%, just by this one small change, right? So that's incredible. Like, you see so much room for optimization in these small elements.
Yeah. There was a recent also market research done by RevenueCat. It's called like also state of the market or something. And they wrote that the top like top 25% of the apps and the bottom 25% of the apps, they differ in metrics up to 14 times. So it just, well, I think speaks that the apps have vastly different metrics, and there is no unified metric or like golden standard or anything. It all really, really depends from app to app.
Yeah, definitely. And that I've seen in my experience, because that's a very easy you question that I'm sure you also get a lot, where people ask you for what are the conversion rates we should be aiming for. And this whole debate about using benchmarks for subscription apps come into the picture, right? I think benchmarks are good to get you started, but then as you said earlier, sometimes having that intuition that, okay, you know, my conversion rates are in single digit, maybe it's not so high for the use case I'm trying to solve, is a better judgment than going for, like, say, the industry average and saying industry average is 4%, so that's what my number should be, right? In terms of pricing, Nikita, like, how do you go about thinking regional pricing? And I know you've also written about hybrid pricing models. How do you suggest app developers look at these two elements? Like, who is it more comfortable for or more made for these strategies? Or when do you start looking at these strategies?
About the regional pricing, you should definitely look into it when you are trying to launch your app in different or new country. Like, you localize your app, you make the new creatives, you have a budget for it, and you started doing ads in some different region that you originally had. And then I will definitely run the whole process of optimizing the price again, but for this exact region. And for hybrid monetization, I think it's really interesting. And I think it was TechCrunch that asked my comments about this. They have an article about hybrid monetization. And I think it really, really depends on the app. So in our fitness app, for example, we have paid like fitness events that happen only during this like 2 weeks period of time with like actual exercises with the other people and some live activities. And I think it works perfectly for one-time purchases, like you buy like a ticket for this event. And it's also a hybrid monetization in a way, because, well, you have your own like regular subscription and you have one-time purchases. Also, the apps with AI features now, they're thinking a lot about one-time purchases, because usually the costs of doing some AI generation is pretty high. And if user is doing this during the trial and then cancels, you kind of lose money on them. So it's not a great way to do it. So I think there will be more niches like this, more places where developers can think about introducing one-time purchases as well with the subscriptions. But for now, I wouldn't say that it's standard. It's definitely something novel and something that people are experimenting with. And I'm all for it. And I think that it's really not that much research and not that much, I think, tried stuff in the apps. But at the same time, it's really, in my experience, it's really hard to implement that to make any sense business-wise. Of course, apps like Lenser can earn millions during several days, but that's like a viral effect that it's impossible to recreate. It's just one-time thing. And for regular apps, one-time purchase may be not the best way to monetize there, because it's not a repeating purchase. It's not renewing. It will not bring you more money in the future. And it's not, there are some challenges from implementation as well. And I wouldn't necessarily say that everyone should try hybrid monetization, but it depends on the product.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like sometimes it's also a product market fit thing, right? Like if you have a very high product market fit, maybe you start introducing these one-time purchases because you have a very clear signal that you're building value for your users and you've identified new ways of doing it. For me, one of the best examples actually comes from like a gaming app. I don't know if you are into gaming apps. I am not actually, but I downloaded this app called Tennis Clash. And that app made me think so much about paywall optimization, because they have, of course, like mobile apps, they have all these incredible in-app purchases and systems around it. But one thing I noticed was with these in-app purchases, what it was doing is it was not waiting for me to see a paywall. It kind of incorporated all these in-app purchases within their product and user flows. So for instance, if I was playing a game of tennis, they kept driving me to the page where I need to collect coins and then, you know, for me to play the game. And at some point it was such a habit that I kept going to that page, and slowly they started putting like these in-app purchases in there, which was super interesting. And I was almost wondering like why any app who's doing hybrid monetization, not only gaming apps, could make use of such a tactic, right? Like I don't know, if you're Bumble, you know, people go into matches very frequently and you start putting something in there, which drives users to buying your in-app purchases, for example.
Yeah, games, mobile games, definitely a place where you can see a lot of one-time purchases. And I think it's quite the opposite of apps with subscriptions. They are now trying to implement subscriptions in the apps, in the games, I mean, and the apps now trying to implement one-time purchases. So I think maybe we'll meet somewhere in the future.
Maybe we'll meet somewhere in the middle. No, absolutely. No, it's been super cool. Like, right, like we spoke about onboarding, we spoke about paywall and pricing. Is there anything that we have missed out when you're looking for monetization and let's say making sure that you earn more money and increase your LTV? Are there any things that you feel app developers or a product team must be looking at in their way to accomplishing this goal?
Well, I can just say some generic advice, like don't be shy about your monetization. Don't hide your paywall somewhere in your app and try to think like a user. But I think that's pretty well-known facts, but maybe that's just my perception. So, yeah, I would say that it really all depends on a multitude of factors. So even the best onboarding paywall wouldn't work by itself. So it also depends on the quality of your product. It also depends on the quality of your traffic, on the quality of your ads, on your screenshots in your App Store page, etc. So it all works like a big machine. All parts are really dependent on each other, and I try to focus on this one part that I'm good at and try to give the developers freedom to work on other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And, if anyone is looking to hire you or get your expertise on the topic, where should they try and find you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Twitter, so just write me anywhere. I'm happy to help.
Absolutely. Awesome, Nikita. Thanks for being here. And I think if anyone listening wants to get in touch, Nikita has, even if you don't want to work with him, it's worth following him because you put out every week, I think, one paywall and then you almost like have a criticism or let's say things you liked about that paywall, things you didn't like, etc. Which I think is such a good way of having your nuggets of thoughts, which go a long way.
Thank you. I really like producing this kind of content and I hope it helps other developers.
Absolutely, man. Thank you so much for being here. And have a great day.
Thank you. You too.